All right. Thank you for that. We are in the book of Mark tonight. Thank Brother Ross for his testimony. He's not very good with dates or numbers. So you figured out that quick math. $4 or $5 away over the course of a month is a lot. Okay. So we are going to look at something tonight. I've always, as I've read this passage many times, it's jumped out at me. I've never spoke on it, but I'm going to preach it tonight. Someone has once said that there are no dumb questions. How many of you have ever heard that phrase? There are no dumb questions. Now, I heard someone say, but there are a lot of inquisitive idiots. Okay, so we'll move on from that. Have you ever asked a dumb question? Now, I've heard dumb answers. How many of you ever heard of Yogi Berra? He was I believe he was a catcher for the Yankees, and he always would say very interesting things. He ordered a pizza one time, and the guy at the counter said, do you want us to cut your pizza into 8 slices or 6? He said, you know what? Cut it into 6. I don't think I can eat 8. Figure that one out. All right. I've heard of some really dumb questions. I heard someone say that one time they told a friend that they had gotten malaria when they were a baby. And their friend asked, oh, my soul, did you survive? Think about that one. One time in our apartment, our electricity went out. And one of the members of my family looked at us and said, wow, without electricity, how are we going to flush a toilet? If you didn't laugh, you don't understand that you don't need electricity to flush a toilet. You just click the handle and it should work. The most ignorant one I heard, somebody called me one time. They called me. And I answered the phone and said, hello. They go, who is this? I'm like, you called me. And it's like, oh, yeah, I forgot who I was calling. So a lot of times there are dumb questions. If you think back, you've probably heard a few of them yourself. We're going to look at one tonight. As we get into chapter 4 here, we see that Jesus had been teaching a crowd throughout the day. He had been teaching them some of the parables of the kingdom. Because the group was so large, Christ had got in a boat and they kind of went out from the shore a little bit there so that he could preach better to them. And they were out there all day. Can you imagine on that ship, the sun beaming down, it could make it a little bit more draining on you physically. And so after that day, which must have been a great day of trying to reach out to people, Jesus tells his disciples that they're going to get in the ship and go over to the other side. Now, after a long day, they must have been excited, you know, like, okay, wow, we're going to go get some rest and take it easy with Jesus. And so they get in the boat to go to the other side. Now, that part of the Sea of Galilee is prone to have these type of sudden storms and very intense storm. And it was a great storm. We know that it must have been pretty intense for fishermen to be afraid. If someone that's not used to being on a ship, they get afraid, that's one thing. But when those that are used to it or those that would run a ship are afraid, that's the time to be afraid. But they are in fear. They realize that Jesus Christ is with them, though. Now, he was at the bottom of the ship, or down in the ship, sleeping very, very peacefully. And sensing that something, that they were in grave danger, they decided to go to Christ and ask for him, for his help. In their anxiety, going in there and seeing them asleep, they asked what I think is really the dumbest question ever asked. Look at the verse. He says, Master, they say, Master, carest thou not that we perish? Now think of that question for a minute. They're not just asking anybody. They're asking Jesus Christ, the one who was God, who became flesh, the one who came to die for their sins, the one they had spent time with. They had seen him do mighty things and great miracles. The ones they had entrusted their eternal soul to, they run to him and say, do you even care that we're about to go down? Don't you care that the ship is going to go down and we are going to drown? That is in essence what they say. Well, we know, of course, that Jesus responds to what is their request. And comes and he calms the sea. And these men get a fear and a new appreciation for Jesus Christ. Now, a lot of times we're tempted when we read the Bible, to look at these men and look at some of the things they do, and we're tempted to criticize them. How could they lack faith? How could they not trust him? But if we're honest, each and every one of us could say that there were times in our life where we may not have asked it, although some of us may have asked it, where we are tempted to say, God, do you really care what is going on in my life? Are you really there? Do you really care about the struggles that I am having? As I look at this, I want you to understand several things that caused them to get to the point that they would question God's love and care for them, and that they would ask him this extremely dumb question. Let me give you a couple of those problems that they had. First of all, they misinterpreted his directions. Look at verse 35. And the same day, the day of the teaching, when the evening was come, he said unto them, let us pass over unto the other side. Now think about that. Jesus Christ told them, we're going to get in the ship and we're going to pass over to the other side. Now, they should have taken comfort in that. He told them they were going to go to the other side. If Jesus tells you something is going to happen, then it's going to happen. Now, understand this. Just because he tells us we're going to go to the other side doesn't mean it's always going to be easy. See, that's the issue that we have issue with. We want everything in life to be, we don't want there to be problems. We don't do good with problems. We don't do good with drama. But that's something that's outside of our control. But they need to understand that God had given them directions. God gives us directions in life. But you know the specifics of how that's going to play out, the specifics of what could happen, we don't understand. Those details aren't filled in. We look at our Bible, and there's many things. By the way, the Bible is the ultimate direction for our lives. You know, we want to get all mystical. Well, what is God's will for my life? You know, I haven't felt the lightning bolt, and God hasn't come, and, you know, I didn't have a dream, and I've heard it too. I've listened to enough preaching, and I hear guys, and again, God deals with everybody in a different way, where I was doing this and God, I sat down and I just knew the second I walked in, this is what God had for me. Can I just tell you something? I've never had that. You know, I heard one guy, it's like he was preaching, should I go to this city? And he almost ran into a truck in the middle of the night as he was driving. The truck had the name of the city he was considering going to. Now I'm not saying that's not of God, but we hear those things and we think that everything in our life ought to be about that. Now, I don't know about that. And God does use some of those things. But I know this, every single thing that he tells me in this book is his will for my life. And I can say this without hesitation. Every single thing he tells us in this book is God's will for your life also. But we follow the directions. Now, within the things that God tells us, a life of consecration and serving in him, sometimes things happen that maybe we don't like. But I know this, God has given us a direction. God's will is always best for your life, but that doesn't mean that the road will not be bumpy. See, what happens to too many of us, we start down that path, and then the second that we start having a few issues or something happens, we bail on God. It's like, well, if this is how it's going to be, I'm gonna do my own thing. Or something negative starts to happen, and we say, well, if something negative is going on, then that can't possibly be God's will, when that's not true. Don't decide God's will based on circumstances that are happening in your life. Too many of us do that. But they misinterpreted his direction. Let's be practical. How often do we fight what God wants in our life? By the way, if we're honest, all of us have done that. If something comes our way and we start to think, is it really worth it to be a Christian and serve God? Is it really worth it to dedicate my life to following God? I can say this, it is worth it. But you know the silliest thing in the world to me Here is someone that's serving God and something comes in their life, some situation, some problem. It's like, well, if that's how it is serving God, I'm going to go do my own thing. And they don't realize that stuff happens in life whether you're serving God or not. But the good thing is when you're serving God, what you're going through has meaning now. What you're going through draws you closer to God and doesn't drive you farther away from him if you'll let it. So they misinterpreted his directions. Number two, I would say they mistook his presence. Verse 36, and when he had sent away the multitude, they took him even as he was in the ship. And there were also with them many other ships. Before we get into the other issues that caused them to ask this question, the root of it, at its very root, is they forgot that God's presence was with them. He was there all along. I mean, I don't know about you, but if I believed, practically speaking, that Jesus Christ is who he said he is, and I realized he was in the ship with me, I would have felt comforted. If I understood that he was really the Messiah, and sometimes the disciples misunderstood things, I would hope I would understand. I know we're having a hard time up here, but he's down here sleeping. Things should be okay. You know, I just have a feeling, and maybe I'm wrong here. I had a feeling that maybe in the midst of the problems, they started dealing with the problems, and they forgot about his presence. And before I get on them, I must confess, I've done that. And I'm going to confess that you've done that. I'll confess for you. Right? Isn't that what happens? Something comes our way and it's like we're dealing with it and it's strong and it's there and we forget in the midst of all that, we start working on the problem. We start with all these things and I got to do this and I got to do this. And it's like, hey, you got someone in the ship with you. Jesus is there, and he may seem to be sleeping. He is sleeping, but that doesn't mean he's not there with us. But we forget that he is there. What they failed to realize that they were in the safe hands the moment Jesus Christ got in the ship with them. Because if they go down, he goes down. And by the way, if you're going to go down, you might as well go down with the right person. We have a hard time going from, as I mentioned this morning, I trust the Lord, to actually trusting the Lord. How many of us forget that God's presence is in each and every one of our lives? How many of us forget in the midst of all that's going on that he's right there for us? Whether it's when we're struggling to do good or when we are tempted to do wrong. I'll never forget, Pastor, in 1989, I think he took his first trip to Cambodia. And he said that, that's back when, you know, that was back in the dark ages, when you got on a plane to go to Cambodia, and that was the last you heard of them until they got back. There was no telephone, no cell phones, no nothing. And there was some folks from Long Beach that went that weren't Christians. It was just kind of a group that was, there was another group that's going, and some of the relatives came. I believe they had a layover, or they stopped for a little bit in Thailand, in Bangkok. And while they were there, one of these, in this other group of family members with some of the people that took him to Cambodia, there was an unsaved guy there, and he went to pastor, and he said, hey, while you're here, are you gonna get yourself a girl? And pastor's like, no, I'm married, and that's wrong. Oh, no, no, and he said, no one is going to see you, no one's going to know about it. And pastor pointed up and said, God will know about it. We don't live our lives like that. We forget that he's with us each and every moment of the day. Just because we don't hear him blaring out at us, just because we feel sometimes that he's not there, he is always there. He doesn't need to always announce his presence. He's always there. Whenever a president gives he's given the speech and he comes in to the chamber and everybody stands and the president of the United States, he's announced. God doesn't need to be announced. He's always there. They mistook that his presence was there. It was only a short trip, 6 miles, and they were in safe hands. Number three, they misunderstood the storm. They misunderstood the storm. Verse 37, and there arose a great storm of a wind, and the waves beat into the ship so that it was now full. Maybe the thinking in their mind was this: if we're doing what God wants us to do, then we shouldn't even have this. The water was coming in. That's a bad sign. But they misunderstood the storm, thinking that this was their end. And this was not the end. It was Jesus wanting to teach the disciples some vital lessons that he knew they needed to learn. One of the things that they needed to learn is that he could be trusted in the midst of storms. And it was about time that they started learning that lesson. You want to know why they needed to learn that lesson? Because one day he was going to be gone. One day he was going to be crucified, and he was going to be out of the picture, and they were going to face some real, honest to goodness storms in their life. They were going to face death. They were going to face becoming martyrs. They were going to be beaten. Everywhere they went, there was going to be someone after them. And they needed to learn in the beginning stages that no matter what's going on in their life, Jesus is there and he can be trusted in the midst of problems. Now, we think it the other way. We sometimes mistakenly think that storms only come to those who have disobeyed God. That's what we think. There's a brand of Christianity out there. It's fake Christianity. So to call it Christianity is kind of a brand that everything should go perfect for you if you're God's child, and God wants you to be wealthy and healthy. There's only one small problem with that. It's not in the Bible. That's not how life works. And so it's not necessarily punishment. You see, God sometimes brings things into our life that are punishment for a Christian who is going against God. But you know what the purpose of that is? God's purpose in that is to bring you back to him, not to destroy you. How many of you have children, and if they do wrong, you punish them? You give them discipline. Why? So you can help them to learn that what they're doing is not right and get them back on the right track. Isn't that what God does sometimes? God's just taking us out because we've sinned. No, God may allow it. And by the way, it's a worst case scenario for those who won't listen to him. He's trying to get them. That's what punishment is. But storms in God's will are meant to teach us lessons and to strengthen our faith. We look and say, well, wait a minute, I haven't done it. I mean, you know, none of us are perfect, okay? But I'm not living in sin. I mean, I'm not perfect, but I'm trying to follow God's will. I'm trying to do, why is this happening to me? Because God is trying to teach you lessons, and he's trying to strengthen your faith, and way too often we only get those in the midst of difficult and trying times. So let's not misunderstand the storm. It's important for us to understand that difference. Because if we misinterpret the storm, then we're going to misapply it. Remember Jonah. Jonah was in a storm. Now, why was Jonah in a storm? Because of his disobedience. And God had to take a worst case scenario towards him. But these disciples were in the storm. Think about it. In obedience. They were in the storm going to where he told them to go. I mean, they were with him. I'm a follower of Jesus. Great. He was in the boat with them. They were being obedient, and they still had a storm. One for Jonah was a matter of punishment to bring him back to God. The other, teaching them some important lessons. It's very important we respond correctly to the things in our life that are unpleasant, because if we don't, we face the possibility of becoming bitter. And I've met people that have been bitter. Remember, many years ago, we were eating with Pastor Esposito, and we were out eating at a restaurant, and the girl that was there, we gave her a track, and she goes, I don't go to church anymore. I quit that. And she had a really bitter spirit. We started talking to her for a few minutes and found out that she had actually went to the same Bible college we went to. And she said, I don't go to church anymore. She goes, when I graduated from college, I was in a church in the Midwest, and the pastor, I think she said, ran off with some tech secretary or something. She goes, and then I think she got hired at a church out here, and she said the same thing happened. And she said, I'm tired of this Christianity. Tired of this stuff. Okay, that was not of God. But when we don't have situations in life that come our way, when we don't handle them in trust, we don't handle them in faith, we become bitter. I've met bitter Christians. By the way, if you go out door knocking or soul winning with us, you've met them too. And a lot of times they just didn't handle the storms right. Instead of drawing closer to God and trying to let God work in their life, they responded incorrectly, and they became bitterness. But what happens if we do understand it's from God and we follow through and we try to do the best that we can? There's growth. We become closer to God than maybe we would have become before. Number four, another one of their issues, they were misdirected by the silence. Verse number 38. And he said, as he was in the hinder part of the ship, asleep on the pillow, they awoke him and said unto him, Master, carest thou not that we perish? All these things that were going on to bring them to the point where they asked this question, part of it was they couldn't understand how in the midst of the storm, in the midst of the problem, Jesus was back there asleep. They couldn't hear from him. Now, let's think about that for a minute. There are two responses to that. The first response and the wrong response is, God doesn't care. Where are you when I need you? The second response is, everything's going to be all right. And by the way, God is never silent to us. It's right here in the Word. I know we don't like those verses, you know. Casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. That is so easy to quote. It's kind of like the kids, you know, and that are in grade school. They know all about tithing until they become adults and get a job. But we all know that we can give Jesus all of our care, because he cares for us, until we actually have something that is bothering us. But never mistake it. God is never silent to us. We may perceive that to be the case, but Jesus was in control from the time he got on the ship until the time that they got off. But I know it's easy. There have been times in my life where we've struggled. And it's like, what is going on here? The reason we think God is silent is because he's not doing what we want him to do when we want him to do it. We talked about this timing this morning. You know, God's going to come through, but I want it right now. It doesn't always work that way. Sometimes you have to wait. Yeah, but this is what I want. That may not be God's plan. And I wonder how many of us, when we get to heaven, if we're going to find out, here's why. And by the way, I think some people abort the process. They're right in the middle of the process, and they don't learn what God wants them to learn, and they never get what God was trying to get to them. They didn't get it. Don't misunderstand his silence. He still loves you. But the disciples, in a sense, they're rebuking Jesus. Hey, don't you care? Okay, you know, you can rebuke some people. I'm not going to rebuke God. Now, I've been there borderline. I've had times where things haven't happened the way I wanted. I remember we were going through a difficult time when we were in Florida, and I needed this job, and I had it, and something happened at the last minute, and it was a good job, a good-paying job, perfect. You know, everything was set up. I wasn't even supposed to go out job hunting that day, and something came through, and I went, to a place cold turkey. They told me they weren't hiring anybody. I filled out an application, and they gave me an interview on the spot, told me they're going to hire me. And when I called them back a few days later, they said, nope, hung up. Now, I went for a walk, and I'm like, no, and you know how sometimes we talk to God. I was not happy. I'm like, what was that all about? I'm like, Lord, you like set everything up and then the door slams? Don't you know why I'm down here? We're trying to start a church. We're struggling financially, Lord. And I'm done. And you know, we had this talk for a while. It wasn't a talk. I was complaining. I wasn't complaining. I was explaining. And I was trying to tell God, why didn't you give me that job? That's the job I needed. I mean, it's better than what. And after a while, God's like, are you through? Are you done? By the time I got done, it's like, all right, Lord, I get it. I feel better now just because I said it. But it's like, I'll trust you. And it took a little bit, but I actually got a better job, better hours, the whole nine yards. But see, we get frustrated because it's not on our time frame. It's not on what we want. And I've been there. But doesn't mean God is being silent. Being silent. His silence does not mean he has abandoned us. You know, God often works in miraculous ways through traumatic experiences. I was just thinking, many of the hymns that we read in this, that we sing in our songbook, many of them were written during times of difficulty. It is well with my soul. We know the story well because of the loss of his children during a time when a ship sank. No one ever cared for me. Have you ever heard that one? No one ever cared for me but Jesus, but like Jesus, was written by an evangelist whose wife threatened him and said, either you quit serving God or I'm leaving. And he said, I'm not going to quit serving God. And she bailed on him. And in his misery, God gave him that song. Hymns are written by those who were physically afflicted. If you look at many of our well-known hymns, were written by a lady called Fanny Crosby. When she was 6 weeks old, she got an eye infection, and her parents brought a doctor in, and he was not the regular doctor, and he put some solution in there, said that would kill the infection, and it killed the infection, but it also burned her corneas, and she lost her eyesight. And yet she did not get bitter as she got older. She wrote many of the great hymns of the faith, Blessed Assurance, I am thine, O Lord, draw me nearer. Some of these things can only happen in the midst of difficult times. And sometimes God has to use that to get us to draw closer to him. The tragic thing is when those times come and we don't use it to draw closer to him. Next, they miscalculated his power. Look at verse 39. Here they are like, Lord, don't you care? We're going down. Verse 39. And he arose and he rebuked the wind. He told the wind to knock it off. And he said unto the sea, peace, be still. And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. I mean, instantaneously. Now think about this. If the wind stops and the storm stops, typically the waves are going to still be going for a while because it's residual. It's like you throw a rock in a lake, you see the ripple effect. Not only did he just stop the storm, he calmed it all out immediately. I think the disciples got it. They saw his mighty power in a great way. By the way, what encouraged the disciples to give their lives for Christ and be martyrs when they saw his great power when he arose from the grave? See, they were afraid. When he was arrested, he was going to be killed. They all were bailing out. We're out of here. And the same men that fled for their lives in fear now fearlessly followed him, willingly giving their lives. Why? Because they saw his great power. And they saw his great power that day. But, you know, they would have never saw it if they got in the ship, Jesus was napping, and you know, they're all sitting on lounge chairs talking and drinking water and eating and having a good time to the other side. They would have never saw that. That trip wouldn't have been memorable. The fact of the matter is that trip probably wouldn't have been even spoken of in the Bible. But because they went through this, they saw his great power. Typically, we see God's power in the midst of problems. And I'm glad that Jesus doesn't just get us through something, he usually will terminate it. And then lastly, we see they misplaced their fear. Verse 40, after the storm was calmed, and he said unto them, why were you so fearful? How is it that ye have no faith? And they feared exceedingly and said one to another, what manner of man is this, that even the wind and the sea obey him? Jesus did not stop with just calming the storm, because the greatest danger to the disciples was not the wind and the waves. It was the unbelief in their heart. They were fearing the wrong things. And Jesus knew if they were going to accomplish what they were going to face and what he wanted them to accomplish, they need not fear what was going on around them. They had better fear what was going on within them. See, what happens around us, that really shouldn't be the thing that we are afraid of. We ought to be afraid of the nonsense that goes on inside of us, how we respond to what God is doing. Jesus knew that if they were fearful, they could not have faith. Fear and faith cancel each other out. If we have fear, you cannot have faith. And I'm talking about fear that stops you. If you have faith, yeah, sometimes we have apprehension, but we don't let that run our lives. But once we let fear take over, there is no faith. And if we have faith, we cannot have fear. Fear is not going to dominate our life. It may try to rear its ugly head, but in spite of that, we're going to do what we are supposed to do. Understand that when we live by faith, we will have the peace of God in every situation. I love the verse in Isaiah chapter 26 and verse 3. It says, thou will keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee. The word stayed means to lean upon, to rest upon, to brace yourself upon. How can we have peace in the midst of storms? We rest upon God. We brace ourselves in those time of storms on the Lord, and we trust in him. We don't allow it to push us away from God. Their fear was misplaced. Now, as we finish, the disciples are just way too much like you and I. I'm glad that the Bible doesn't just show us the good points of everybody. You know, it's very rare if you read an autobiography and it says, I was a knucklehead, I was an idiot. Let me tell you all the dumb things I did. Usually everything is, better than it was. The Bible's not an autobiography. God tells us about these men in their good points and in their moments of weakness. Now, why is that an encouragement? Because you and I go through all that too. We're all going to go through those times. And there's times when we're tempted to say, Lord, are you really involved in what's going on in my life? Do you really care about what's going on? Lord, do you understand how I feel? And I'm here to tell you that, yes, he does. And so let's trust him. And it may just be that during those times that your faith will be increased. You'll be strengthened like never before. Let's all stand together this evening.